Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. I'm Amy Frost and my guest today is Jessica Freeman. Jessica's a Grand Prix dressage rider and trainer based in southern New Hampshire in America. She's going to share her story of how she became a Grand Prix rider, but also how difficult it was to pluck up the courage to give up her full-time job and do this every day as a profession. Jessica's doing incredibly well, and to add to it, she met Carl Hester a few weeks ago. So she's going to share some advice that she learned from him on how to train her young horses at home. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. We've got a lovely lady on today. Her name is Jessica Freeman. She's a USDF bronze, silver and gold medalist located in southern New Hampshire. USDF, she tells me, stands for the United States Dressage Federation. So she's also a Grand Prix, not only rider, but also coach. And she recently met Carl Hester. How are you, Jessica?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I saw your awesome posts on Twitter the other day about your view with Carl. How was that?
It was amazing. I was completely tongue-tied. And
no, you can't be tongue-tied. You won all those awards.
No, it was like, I don't know. I think in dressage, there's so few people that are such great representations of classical riding, classical dressage, and he really is kind of a hero that I look up to. So it was great.
So how did that come about then? Was he doing a clinic over in America?
Yeah, so he came to New England for the first time. He's never been over here before. And the New England Dressage Association arranged for him to do a symposium. That's our local group member organization for our region. So they have a symposium every fall and winter, but this was the first time Carl Hester has come. And it was a very big deal. The tickets sold out almost immediately. Wow. And then eventually they found some more tickets, but it was like everyone got their tickets at midnight the day that they opened. So it was a lot of excitement for dressage. And he came up for 2 days. And the Friday before the clinic, he did a meet and greet for the sponsors. Mm-hmm. And I used to be an equine vet tech. And so the vet that I worked for was one of the sponsors. So one of my old coworkers had me come up with her and I helped her set up her booth and everything. And I said, I'll go with you. We're good friends. So of course I'll, you know, come hang out with you for a few hours. Mm-hmm. A bit of a long drive. But I said, my goal is to get to meet Carl Hester and have a picture with him. So I got to do that. I actually got to take a picture with myself and then with two of the girls that went to the same university that I did. One that I knew from college and then one that must have started like the year after I left. So it was very cool.
So it's so cool. So imagine how you felt. Just take that in of how you felt when you met Carl. That's how I feel all the time. It's how so many people feel when they meet you because you're their inspiration.
Hopefully someday. We're working on it. My horse is just starting out at the Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a very like up and down year in terms of consistency and scores, but we're getting it together. We have all our homework that we're working on. We know what needs to be done. So hopefully next year we'll consistently score, you know, quite a bit higher is the goal.
And how long have you had him?
I've had him for 4 years. I got him through the vet that I used to work for. He was like sort of a second, third level horse. When I got him, he had one clean change, the other change, it's not so clean. and then I showed him third level and then fourth PSG. I won. And now this is our fourth year of showing and we've done Grand Prix.
Wow, that's amazing. So in 4 years, you've done so much.
Yeah, he's been a really cool horse. done a lot of body work with him, muscle building. He did a lot of initially just stretching work with him and long and low and just getting his top line really strong. He's a big mover, but he is a bit on the, he's very lazy. he's not anymore. Like, he's in front of my aids and everything now pretty consistently, but if he was a person, he would be the guy, you know, drinking the beer on the couch, watching football on Sundays. Like, he's very sweet. It's nice because you can go on trail rides. Like, we do, you know, some different stuff that you can't always do with a really hot horse. Mm. You can, but it's a lot harder. And he's a bit fun for me because I can go and pretend he's just, you know, a nice trail horse and we have a nice relaxing ride.
That's so nice though, because you get to enjoy him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's drawbacks and benefits to every personality type of horse. Mm. So the benefit to him is he's really, really fun to show. He likes to show.
Oh, nice. So you've had him 4 years. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been riding for?
I've been riding since I was about 8 or 9. And for a long time, it was just once a week lessons. My parents aren't horsey, did not come from a background where they could afford to buy me a horse at all. And so it was like lessons at the local barn. So I was about probably 11 or 12. I started working at the barn for more lessons. And since then, I've just kept working and cleaning stalls and, you know, riding whatever I could get my hands on, whatever no one else wanted to ride. And getting that experience. So I was a working student for a long time for a local trainer. I've been kind of part-time doing the training thing for a long time, going around, and now I'm doing it full-time. So it's been a fun transition.
That's a big leap to take though, mm-hmm. isn't it? From going part-time and working to then going, actually, mm-hmm. no, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Well, it's for me, it was, you know, I wanted to show my horse Grand Prix. And if you are trying to work, you know, a full-time job and then ride and train, your horse is always on the back burner. Mm. Everyone else's horse comes first, and then your horse gets whatever half hour at the end of the day you have for him. So for me, it was like, if I really want to do this, then I have to do it if I'm going to show Grand Prix. Like, otherwise, we're not going to get there.
Oh, no. Like, I know how you feel.
I spend more than half an hour with him, so it's been fantastic, and we've had a good show season. I have another horse that I showed this year who's an 18 hand Westphalian mare, and it was her first year really showing consistently, and she had a blast with her as well. She did super, so it's been really fun.
So when you say showing, do you mean dressage? Because
mm-hmm.
over here, yeah, we have showing, which is where it's not. Oh. So we have dressage and we have showing.
Oh, no.
It's like two
only
different
dressage.
Disciplines. Just dressage.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know, it's bizarre, isn't it? The different countries have so many. Because we've kind of got over here equitation, but I know that it's really big with you.
Yes, hunter jumper equitation. That's probably the biggest thing over here.
I think we should bring it, like, have way more equitation over here because it looks so much fun. But just going back to the showing and the dressage, so you just do dressage. So you're
mm-hmm. only dressage.
Only dressage. So your horse, what's he called? The one that you've had for 4 years?
Zen.
Zen. Is he the one? He wasn't your first horse.
No, no.
So how did you take that step from working in stalls and cleaning out other people's horses to getting your own?
Well, I leased a horse from my neighbor. So I used to ride my bike over there and I took care of her barn and leased a horse from her. And he was a Dutch warm blood and he had figured out how to dump her, or that if he spooked, she would get off of him. Mm-hmm. So he was really sweet, but like it was a little bit of a mismatch. And she tried a long time with him and I would ride him. I took lessons on him and he got really not very spooky quickly because he was not at all really a spooky horse. He just figured it out. So she gave him to me when he went lame. and I tried to fix him for a while and ended up finding a home for him with people that have more resources. I think at that point I was like 17. Maybe 16, 17, and we injected some stuff, and then my bank account was zero because it was all, you know, money I'd earned working at barns and stuff, so it was not a lot of money. And he is still actually alive. We are both 31, and he went, the owners, I think, gave him 2 years off, did a lot of diagnostics. They were great, did everything they could for him, figured out what would make him sound. After a few years, and he taught all their kids dressage.
Oh, wow. So,
and he's still being ridden, which is great.
Oh, that's really lovely.
So that was my first horse. And then my second horse, even better, I had saved up a little chunk of money, I think like $3,000 or $2,000, and bought a 17-hand warm blood. That was skinny.
Huge. That's a huge horse for your first horse.
I'm 6 feet tall, so, you know.
Yeah, but that's still a big horse. That's a long way to fall, Jessica.
Well, and it turned out he was skinny and cheap because he was really badly behaved. And as soon as I met him, he showed his true colors. So he would bolt quite a bit. But I learned a lot from him. I had him for a few years, so.
And is he the one that you ended up competing and winning all these amazing medals with?
No. So my bronze medal, which is like basically a certification at first, second, third levels, I got on different horses that I leased through when I was a working student. So I think I got my third level scores on an 18-3-hand warm blood. That was Buck. But he was one of my favorites ever. He was really funny. He had such a sense of humor. I guess cheeky, as you would say. He was very like cheeky. And then I think I finished up those scores on a horse that used to stick his tongue over the bit. So I figured out like I could we did a lot with him. Like his owners did some diagnostics and, you know, he had some vet work done and I could ride him very steady to the outside rein and he wouldn't stick his tongue over. So I got my scores on first and second level scores on him.
So can you would you mind just explaining those scores to me of how they work?
So in dressage, obviously, you know, we have scores. You can score theoretically up to 100%, but no one really does. Maybe Charlotte will someday. and I think for the bronze medal, it might be over 60% you have to get at first, second level, like a certain number of tasks in front of different judges. So it just shows that you're proficient. And then the third level scores are what usually throw people off because you have to have a horse that does a flying change, obviously. And, you know, that some horses just don't get there or the training hasn't been there is more likely the case.
So I guess that's very similar to our British dressage point system. So when you're affiliated, you go to all the shows, you build up some points and then you get top placing. So out of the whole of the United States, you got bronze, silver and gold.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people with bronze and silver medals, less with gold because I won Grand Prix, but it still was something that I always wanted to achieve. And I'm, you know, proud that I did it on a shoestring budget.
Cheers. Yeah. With nothing, clearing out other people's poo. Like that's amazing. Yeah. So what happens then? Do you move on to the FEI rankings?
So for FEI rankings, you have to compete at the CDIs, which are the international shows. Mm-hmm. And so you have to compete in the double bridal. And that's something that I would like to do eventually. My horse is, because he's very laid back and he's got a really small mouth, the double bridal can be tough for him. Sometimes he's okay in it for a little while and then he doesn't really like it. And it shows because he's a little bit more tense. He does a lot better if I ride him in a Snapple for the Grand Prix. So at some point we'll keep, you know, messing around and go ahead and play with showing him in the double again. He did it at third level. And maybe next year, like that's one of my goals is to keep trying. And I've tried some different bits, some smaller bits, lighter bits, that sort of thing. So maybe at some point we do a CDI, but...
But that's interesting. So the only thing that's holding you back from that level then and from going to FEI is the fact that you have to wear a double bridle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what do you know?
I mean, and we're not scoring well enough that I would pay all the money to do a CDI yet. Like I want him to, if we were going to do a CDI, he would have to be really 100% confirmed and right there for me. Mm. So maybe, I mean, it's our first year at Grand Prix and he's 11, so we've got plenty of time.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah.
I'm also really excited for you because you're only 4 hours away from New York. And I've just heard of this incredible show that goes on in New York in Central Park. It's the Central Park Horse Show.
Yes.
And the last few weeks I've been saying, how incredible would it be to be able to compete there? Is that something that you're going to do?
I doubt I will get there. I think it's an invitation only show for dressage, I believe. So it's a lot of like kind of Olympic riders or Olympic level riders, which is great. It's really fun to watch, but I don't know with my horse. He's very nice. He'll be a very accurate Grand Prix horse someday. Mm. I don't know if he's not quite that flashy. Yes. He's a good egg. He's got a really good Piaf passage. So we should be able to, you know, improve our scores and do well, but you know, there's a difference between a very good Grand Prix horse and a very good international Grand Prix horse. And I'm realistic about it. So
but that's
just fine.
That's good to know. You know how far your horse can go and what potential they've got. And ultimately, you sound like you're still really enjoying it.
Absolutely. I think you always have to be realistic. You know, every horse can do different things to their different ability. And to have any horse that can get to FEI level and, you know, do the Grand Prix especially is really, really cool. They have to sit. They have to be really sound. That's usually what kind of keeps them from getting there. And maybe someday I'll have a horse that's, you know, this super fancy horse that can also compete at, you know, international level shows. But for now I'm enjoying, you know, doing what I'm doing. So
how did you make that move then? When you made the decision to do this full time, you're basically giving up your job. So you've got no income coming in. How did you survive?
Well, I had savings and sort of was doing enough with the riding anyway that I knew what would be coming in. Like, I've been teaching and stuff. So, and I have a very nice husband and he took a year off the year before. So he was like, if you want to go do it, like, you do it now. So,
So you're really lucky that you've got a good husband that understands
supportive.
Our passion and our craziness.
He doesn't understand how expensive horses are. I keep that, you know, because it's all my horse pays for himself for the most part, like, or I pay, you know, I make it work. But he knows how much it means to me. So that's really great.
And does he help you with the horses or is that very much your remit?
Yeah, it's just my thing. So he's not a horse person. He can come to the barn and feed my horse carrots. He's ridden my horse once at the walk and pee off. I made him my horse pee off.
With him on it?
Yes.
What did he do?
That was a little alarming. But he was great. He's great. I just told him, sit there, don't touch anything.
Yeah. and don't kick.
Yeah.
So tell me then, Jessica, what did you get from going to the clinic with Carl Hester? What did you take from it the most?
About 4 pages of notes. I think the biggest thing for me was, I guess the overall picture was the biggest thing for me. Like, the way the clinic was set up, it was young horses. And then they started in the morning with the young horses and then worked up through the levels to a Grand Prix horse. And so it was really nice to see and hear him talk about how they approach young horses. It's really different than how a lot of people over here approach young horses, especially with the workload.
What's different about it?
So he really sticks to like a 4-day-a-week schedule with the young horses. So they do Monday, Tuesday, they ride them 20, 30 minutes, not long. They have Wednesday off and then they're worked Thursday, Friday, and then on the weekends they go for a hack. And so over here it's a lot more, it seems like there's a lot less time for them to be youngsters once they come to training in a lot of barns. And oftentimes they're worked a lot longer than 20, 30 minutes, worked, you know, 5-6 days a week. And we don't in a lot of places have the pasture area that it sounds like Carl does where they can live out for the 3- and 4-year-old year of their life. I think it's hard to find a barn for your young horse around here where they don't, where they get a lot of turnout and they sort of get to hack and they get to be a horse. Like, usually when they come in, they kind of come in and go to work. So that's hard. It's a little bit too, like, our geography and just the fact that land is really expensive over here and, you know, not a lot of barns are on a lot of land, so turnout can be fairly limited. I'm lucky that my barn has a lot of turnout, so my horses get to, you know, be horses, but
yeah,
it's not common.
That surprises me because you're a much bigger country than we are. And actually over here, it's very hard to get good land. It's hard to get a lot of land.
Sure.
You know, most people are on 1 acre per horse. And I'm trying to find somewhere at the moment. You know, we're on 5 acres a horse. I'm really lucky. You can't find that anywhere. It's unless you buy your own land, unless you're a millionaire and buy, like, you know, 30 acres. So in terms of the training then, are you taking on his techniques? Are you going to be training in that same regime of, you know, 2 days on, 1 day off?
Not for my schedule, but my horses work 5 days a week. I don't have any really, really young horses at the moment. So everyone's kind of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, that area, that age, which is funny because usually I have at least 1 3-year-old, you know, and it's getting cold out and I'm usually like, oh, 3-year-old's going to be wild, but I don't right now, which is nice. In some ways. So I will stick to my schedule. I don't work them super hard 5 days a week. They, you know, they come out, they do what they need to do. Oftentimes it's 20 minutes. And then they go in. But I totally would see the benefit, especially if I had more horses going and more young horses. And then his training methods, I would say, complemented very well what I'm already doing. But it was really nice to hear him talk about, you know, the importance of some things like transitions. And he had a couple of tweaks about how you ride like the trot walk transitions that were great. I've never heard before. It made a lot of sense. He had some amazing exercises for the canter work. And for how to teach the canter pirouettes without making the horse feel like they were too hard, like how to teach them in a little bit of a more playful, easy manner.
Sounds like you got loads from it.
Yeah. So that sort of thing I'll definitely incorporate.
You said earlier that you like to ride classical. So how would you say that your technique is different to other Grand Prix riders that you've seen?
I think once you get up to the upper levels, you know, the people that have gotten there are all using variations of a similar technique for the most part, some exceptions, you know, of course, exist, but my technique is just very basic. You know, they learn to stretch, they learn to connect over their top line, always straightness from the outside rein, going forward from a light leg is kind of the most important thing. And then you just build on those basics and you just build and the horses do what they do, you know, at their own pace. There's no pushing them to be on a schedule. Like they're either going to do it or they're not, but letting them just get those basics better, get the connection better, get the balance better. As they start to get stronger through their back and top line, the balance comes up, they sit more on their hind legs. And then through that balance, you can start to work more on the collection. And then they eventually, you know, show you really what they can do.
Yeah, love it. I totally agree with you. I'm such a, you know, calm, relaxed, kind of soft person. In fact, I think maybe I'm a little bit too soft sometimes. but I'm really interested to know your thoughts on contraptions, because lots of people are using these contraptions at the moment of let's pull the horse's head in and let's push it forward. But, you know, side reins and, you know, things like that, which are holding the horse together. What are your thoughts on that?
So definitely, I mean, when I'm teaching like a young horse to lunge, or when I'm lunging a horse, I'll use side reins, but loose and low. So sort of at the point of the elbow, so that it just teaches the horse to stretch. You want the horse to go in basically that bascule fashion that they, where they lift their back, like they're when they go over a jump. So the neck should be long, low, out and down. And the nose should be out. That's really important. But I don't keep them tight, and I don't certainly don't really ride with anything. In the past, I've had some trainers who, you know, would put one draw rein on for straightness, like you put one on the outside rein for straightness if the horse is really exceptionally naughty or dangerous or whatever. But I don't really use it myself currently. And I don't really use anything else. I'm looking into some of the like equiband training systems for lunging, which helps get their hind end under and get their abs a little bit more engaged, and that's sort of interesting to me. They've just done a study that they released that shows that it helps strengthen the core muscles of the horse pretty well, so that's something I'll look into in the future. And occasionally I'll use something lunging. It's called a horse hugger, same thing. It works underneath the or behind the horse's tail, sort of lower than the horse's tail, I guess. It goes above their gaskins, and again, it just encourages them to keep their hind legs under a little bit. Play with that once in a while if it's a light day, and you know, just to help the horse figure out the hind legs. But in terms of holding the head down or something, it's not really anything that's going to help any problem.
No, I feel the same, and I'm seeing more and more riders that are riding in draw reins and giving the horse no room to move. And so I just thought, well, let's talk about it, get your opinion. We'd like to get some other views on what they think, and just say maybe I don't know if that's the right way, but I can't say what's the right way and wrong way. I'm just interested to know opinions, really.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah.
Every month I talk to a veterinary expert. We talk about diseases and problems. And a couple of weeks ago, one of the vets actually mentioned an Equiband, and they said they're quite good, they can be quite good for building up the strength and the core muscles.
Yep.
So I get where you're going with that. And I think with lunging, you know, I've used a couple of things, a Pessoa. That worked quite well. It's just the whole holding a horse in. Oh, I just don't agree with it. I want them to learn. I want them to be able to make that, to teach them to be able to find their position themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to be able to make mistakes. It's, you know, if they can't use their head and neck to balance, there's a problem. They need it. And in fact, I think the horses that really have their head and necks held in while they ride are much more prone to injury because they can't save themselves if they trip or they step weird. Whereas a horse that has a little bit of a longer neck has some elasticity in the contact. If they take a weird step, they land wrong, they can fix it themselves. Whereas if they have that ability taken away, it can definitely see a higher incidence of injuries. Mm. And so, plus now they're really starting to look at, you know, neck and back, backs more from a radiographic and ultrasound standpoint. And, you know, we're seeing a lot more problems with them, which is probably due to our, you know, we have imaging techniques we didn't used to have and knowledge about how to look at them. But you have to wonder, with a horse that's ridden really, really deep or really tight for a long time, what that does to the ligaments and the cervical vertebrae on the neck, and certainly then the vertebrae, thoracic and lumbar in the back.
Okay, over in America.
Yeah.
What's the support like? Do you get much support locally? Do you get support from the United States Federation? How do they help you with your riding?
There's not a lot in America, like at least financially. There's educational opportunities, and those are great to take advantage of. And that's kind of for everyone. So there's not, even I think the bigwig team riders have to fund most of it themselves or through sponsors. It's just not how we do it over here, unfortunately.
Well, we have to do it on our own over here too. You know, we do have to pay for things ourselves. It's not so much the financial support. I guess I'm talking about education and opportunities for riders to learn and meet other riders and just gain experience, like shows, and not feel like they're on their own.
Oh, okay. So yes, in that sense, like we're actually really lucky. One of the girls that I went to UNH with, and she met Carl Hester with me. She came up with me because I was scared. Has a company that puts on recognized dressage shows in our area. So even though we're in New England and everything is kind of far away from everything else, she has like, I think, 3 or 4 recognized dressage shows that USDF sanctions that I can go to that are like within half an hour. Don't have to stable overnight. Everyone else can go. They're, you know, anyone that's a member of USDF, USEF, can go. There's really good judges. There's usually some clinics in the area that you can go to. So in terms of that, we're actually pretty lucky where we are. It's easy to access recognized shows, and there's actually a number of pretty good recognized instructors in my area. We have a pretty big group member organization, which is the New England Dressage Association, and they hold educational events throughout the year.
That's good.
Schooling shows. So yeah. So in terms of that, like actually being in New Hampshire, we're pretty lucky. There's a lot out there that you can go to.
Oh, good. So, and what is it when you're doing your training at home and you're doing your dressage? I love dancing with horses. I talk about this all the time. So I put on my iPod and I pretend that, you know, we're dancing. What techniques do you use or what do you do at home that isn't just dressage that maybe can enhance your dressage? Like, do you do a lot of jumping? Do you do pole work? Things like that.
I don't do any jumping. My horse is not, we've tried it. He's a little laid back to be a jumper. He's not careful.
Is he not? Does he go through them?
No. Yes. Yeah. Or he trots over them like a fancy dressage horse. So we, in the past, we've done some Cavalletti. I don't have Cavalletti right now. So pretty much just sticking to sort of trail riding and walking around and doing a bit different stuff like that when they need something different. And then also just changing up the routine enough every day, like I'm not drilling them or doing the same thing day after day. Mm. So they don't tend to get ring sour or bored at all.
Because it's so easy for them to get bored. I mean, three times of doing something with Blackjack and he's like, okay, I've had enough now. Can we try something else? So we do have to keep their minds occupied all the time.
Yeah. But just make it very clear that, you know, when they've made the right choice, it's like they've won the Olympics and it's a big deal. And then they really get into the training. And I think once they figure out, you know, a little bit how to learn and the process, they really like it.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So how do you remember your tests? That's my other question. Do you play it on your phone to remind you, or do you write them down? Or because everyone has their own way of remembering things, and I can never remember my test.
So I usually look at the tests. I read the directives. Then I usually watch some YouTube videos of other people riding the tests.
Good idea.
And I ride the test at home. Both my horses like to know what's coming. They like to practice the test. Mm-hmm. And then I do a lot of visualization. Like, I'll sit in a dark room, my eyes closed, and run through the test, and not only run through the movements, but where all my transitions need to be, where my problem spots are going to be. Have a plan, like if, you know, horse A drifts right a little bit, and I visualize the test with my right leg on a little bit coming down center line. You know, if horse B can be a little bit explosive in the canter transitions, then I visualize making them a little bit soft and supple and quietly asking for that canter transition out of a little shoulder four. It's just getting a game plan and going over it so that it becomes something you don't have to think about. You can just ride what's going on at that moment, and then everything else hopefully is right there.
Sounds quite good. So we need a little rocking horse at home, don't we?
Really, yeah. Yeah.
So we were talking about dressage, we were talking about training techniques at home. We need to get in something technical, I think. So what can we bring in technical to teach people?
For technical, I would say a really good tip that I saw at the Carl Hester Symposium that was really simple that anyone can use was two things. He had people doing trot walk transitions and trot canter transitions. And when you went down from walk, to really make sure you pushed your hands forward and followed and thought about almost pushing the horse's head away from you. Mm-hmm. So really kind of a, you know, almost not quite rowing motion, but really following with your hands and being really cognizant of that first ride. Which was good because oftentimes I think we are so focused on making the transition perfect that we don't give. And then the horse gets a bit backed up in the walk. We don't give enough. And the way he wanted to really, really give made a big difference in everyone's walk. And then the other exercise he had that was great was halting before your corners, because the horse learns to just do the corner on their own basically and not stay balanced and not wait for you. So he would have people trot down the long side, halt in the corner, and then if you were going to do a turn, if the corner was a left-hand corner, he would have you turn your horse right, trot off, and go to the next, you know, halt before the next corner. If it was a right-hand corner, you turn left, you do that a number of times, and then go through the corner, and the horse starts to wait for you. They don't just go and make the corner on their own.
Clever. So what they're not doing is they're not anticipating the corner.
Mm-hmm. And when they anticipate the corner, their weight gets down on the inside shoulder. So everything that we're doing in dressage is to try to keep them off the inside leg and keep their, you know, balance around their inside leg and not let them lean on their inside shoulder. And so that really stops that problem really quickly. So it was a great exercise.
And have you tried any of these since you got home?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And how did you get on?
It was really good. I couldn't do too many trot transitions with my Grand Prix horse, because then he was like, "Woo!" or trot halt. He was very excited about getting to halt before the corner. So we only did a couple, but I have a very big mare that I ride, and she's just learning to have her balance more up. She's about 18 hands, so it's a lot of horse to balance, and it was very helpful for her because it made her really think about that corner instead of just going through it. And shortening the strides with her a little bit helped her stay balanced too.
I think that's one of the hardest things, is keeping the horse balanced. Mm-hmm. We're still failing at this.
Yeah.
So from your point of view, from riding the same horse for a long time, mm-hmm. How would you go about teaching your horse to be balanced? Maybe you said your horse is 11?
Yep, 11.
Yeah, so he's 11 years old. Let's mm-hmm. say he's completely unbalanced. You've just taken him on. He's been doing bits and bobs, but you really want to kind of step it up a gear. Mm-hmm. How would you teach an 11-year-old to be more balanced?
I would be a little concerned if it was an 11-year-old that was totally unbalanced. I would have the vet out first.
Well, I don't know. You say that, but Blackjack's 9, and we've had a lot of time off, and he's very unbalanced.
Okay. Well, if all things were normal from a neurologic and veterinary standpoint, I would definitely work a lot on transitions and teaching the horse to really move off your inside leg. Mm-hmm. So a lot of sort of, I would start with turn on the forehands, and then from there you teach them to leg yield and do some leg yield work, even a little bit shoulder fore, so they start really thinking about that inside hind leg. This assumes they can go in a straight line.
Yeah, we can't do that
before that. Yeah, that would be the first thing. If you can't go on a straight line, you can't go sideways, because it'll just make them more crooked. Mm-hmm. And so for a horse that's truly very all over the place, I would start with doing a lot of work off the track, picking a straight line, sticking to it, do transitions on that line, and work on teaching them to just move off your outside rein, doing some square turns, and yeah, everything off the track. No using the wall until they get really, really good at it for months.
I'm writing all this down now. So let's just get all of that down, all those notes. Yep, brilliant, thanks. Yeah. That's what I'm going to be doing this weekend. So not on the track, going in a straight line. Wish me the best of luck.
Yeah, so you pick about a meter off the track, so the turns aren't a lot smaller for them. And really, if you have mirrors, that's great. You can look in the mirror and do transitions, you know, trot walk transitions, and really unbalanced horse going into walk from the trot will fall whichever way they want to fall naturally. So if they're a horse that goes out their left shoulder a lot, if you do a trot walk transition towards the mare, I can guarantee you will stagger to the left. So it starts making you more aware of the horse's balance and where your body is and how you can help him.
Another thing that helps with that sometimes is a car, if you're going out on a hack, because some horses spook at cars. So I love it because Blackjack hates cars. So I'm like, let's do a little bit of trotting sideways, Blackjack. Let's do your flexion and bending now. It works really well.
That's one way to get them more uphill.
Well, you have to use what's around you, don't you, really? I mean, we can't all ride in a school all the time. So you've got to use whatever you can get your hands on. And if that's a dog chasing you to get them to move forward, or
that will get them to move forward.
Works quite well. And just quickly going back to your training and, you know, what's around locally for you. We're really lucky in the UK that there's a company set up called Dressage Anywhere. So if you can't leave your yard, then you can film your sessions or film your test at home, and they also do training and things.
I actually won a gift certificate to there, which I thought was a really cool idea. I just haven't had anyone to video me and a test.
Oh, just pop it up in the corner of the arena.
They said you had to Zoom, and that was my problem. I can't Zoom.
No,
you know,
not if you're doing it by yourself. But what you could do is pop up two cameras and get both angles, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We'll have a chat with them. You need to zoom in so they can see what you're doing.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does, doesn't it?
I need to get one of those really cool auto-follow cameras.
Yes, the ones that you put in the middle of the arena, and they've just it just follows you as you go around.
Yeah.
Is that your Christmas
present?
That
would be amazing. I hope, maybe. If Santa's really nice to me.
Or the husband needs a new job.
Yes.
Every evening he can come and film you. But that's okay, because I got my other half, my husband. I've managed to get him to do some filming, because he feels good. And taking photos, because he wants to be involved. He's had a go at riding, but I still don't trust him with the horses.
Yeah.
So, but men, well, he, I can't say men in general, but he needs a job. So that is his job, is to do that. But the, you know, the going on dressage anywhere, and the recording yourself, and then you send it in, and they actually judge you on how your riding is, and you learn, and some people are doing really well on it.
That's great. It's a great idea.
Do you have one over there?
We don't have anything like that.
Okay. Get on dressage anywhere. I won't tell them. You say you live at my house. They don't need to know. I'm sure they wouldn't mind if you're in America.
No, I'm sure it's fine. I don't think we have anything. I think there are some people where you can like send in video lessons and everything. I'm lucky enough that like we have a lot of FEI trainers in the area. So I go to lesson with one in Maine a couple times a month. And then I probably do some clinics with other people throughout the winter. There's another lady in New Hampshire that I took a lesson with recently. So there's very qualified help around.
There's a guy that I love near you, and he's called Troy Griffith, and he's not a dressage rider. He doesn't compete, but he is incredible with his classical training. Like, literally, this guy is insane. Have a look at him on Facebook.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
He does medieval riding. I know. Wow. How crazy does that sound? But what I love is his technique with his riding. So he trains all his horses. He has beautiful Frisians. Mm-hmm. And he only trains in classical. And he quotes things from the 1800s.
Huh.
Which I just think
it's
really interesting, because I think it's amazing how you can get something that was said all those years ago and put it into today's riding. So he does these, I can't remember what they're called, but like displays, like medieval displays, reenactments. Yep. He does the reenactments. But his actual training and his riding and the way that he does a lot of groundwork, and he writes all these posts and puts videos out. And I just think it's fascinating, because it's very much classical. You can't get more classical than Troy Griffith.
I'll have to look.
So, it's interesting to take some of his elements into dressage today. It's very similar. Anyway, I've taken up more than enough of your time, and I'm sure you want to go and get on your pony.
Yeah, no worries. I'm going to go drive. Unfortunately, I live in about 50 minutes from, like, almost an hour from the barn. So I'm going to go get in the car and then go teach some lessons. It'll be great.
Well, thank
worth the drive. My horse is very happy.
It is worth the drive. Thank you so much for your time. How can we follow you on Twitter?
On Twitter, I am Dressage247. And on Instagram, I am JM Dressage. So it's JMD and then the rest of the word Dressage. My initials before I got married were JMD.
Oh, I know. We have to change our name after we're married. Yeah. It's
but
the
I didn't
worst.
I didn't change my Instagram.
I still haven't yet. I won't change my Twitter handle. It's still Amy Stevenson 1, but it just says Amy Frost. And I still can't get my head around the fact that my name is no longer my name. It's crazy. Well, enjoy your ride, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Wasn't Jessica lovely? I really enjoy hearing your stories. And it doesn't matter if you're a Grand Prix rider or an amateur rider like me. As long as you're having fun with your horse, learning all the time and enjoying it, that's what matters. And I think we can all learn a lot from each other. So I hope you enjoy Horse Hour Monday nights between 8 and 9 p.m. on Twitter. You can speak to equestrians from all over the world. All you do is include our hashtag Horse Hour in your tweets, and then you can get involved in conversations. If you'd like to listen to previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast, just head to our website, horsehour.co.uk, and there's a whole bunch of education on there for you. Because I don't know about you, but these dark nights are meaning I have a little bit of extra time in the evening, which is quite nice because I like to get the horses done in daylight. Trying to put on rugs in the middle of a field in pitch black is quite tricky. So yeah, I do have a few extra hours. So I've been spending some time researching fun things that you can do with your horse. So there's lots on our website for you. I've got some great guests coming up over the next few weeks on the podcast. I'm sure you'll love them. Now, you ready for this? I feel like I need a drum roll. We have Mary King, Emily King. Yes, both of them. It's really interesting to get their take on eventing and their journey, their individual journey, and then how they're working together as well. So I hope you enjoy those episodes. I also speak to Helen West, who runs Bicton Arena. She was an eventer herself. Very, very clever lady. She organises two huge horse trials at Bicton Arena every year. And it's really interesting to get an organiser's perspective of how events run. But also, oh my gosh, she was just incredible to speak to, so I'm sure you will love her interview. Then I also speak to the lovely Harriet Morris Bomber. So lots of great guests coming up. I hope you have a great week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter Mondays 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.